If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know. Let them know.
John Pollock and Waitay with you. We have just warmed up with a cool 40 minutes of news, an extensive review of the Real Hulk Hogan documentary on Fox, presented by TMZ on Tuesday night.
I would say pretty extensive, yeah. We have certainly a lot of discussions about it, in particular Vince McMahon's contributions to the documentary, his first media appearances in quite some time.
We also got the frantic scramble in the TMZ newsroom when Hogan
died. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
He's got 137 words.
Yeah, it's like 175 words. 16,000, yeah. Okay? Don't F with me.
Could Harvey you ever Levin. See yourself working in the TMZ newsroom?
Only if I had given up on life.
Okay, yeah.
Big discussion of the Hogan doc. Karrion Kross, or should we say Killer Kross, or Kevin Kesar on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani. We discussed that, as well as the G1 Climax. We're down to the Sweet Six in the A and B block. The playoffs on Thursday, the quarterfinals, followed by the semis on Saturday, finals on Sunday, and then G1 season is wrapped up for another year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of thoughts, lots of discussion on the remaining scenarios at play here.
Yes. What a season for you, eh? You not only kept up with the G1, but you dog-walked us.
You know what? Randomly selecting has its advantages from time to time.
Yeah. Don't give away your trade secrets. But yes, Waitay, the king of the C block, and as well, so some ratings notes from Tuesday. All of your news can be found at postwrestling.com. And coming up, we do want to alert people. Wayne and I dropped our latest Unreal review of WWE Unreal episode 2 Push, covering the Royal Rumble and Jey Uso's big win at this past year's Royal Rumble, which began like a week, 10 days before, where everyone sat down and said, who's going to win the Rumble? A bunch of people voted for Punk. A bunch of people voted for Cena. And then the Freebird himself joined in on a Zoom call.
So we are led to believe, you know, but what is reality?
Are you questioning? Are you questioning any of this?
Well, you know what? Listen, as we all should be in the Polavex world here, but a lot of really interesting discussion for us, I think, coming off of these discussions of Unreal. I'm looking forward to talking certainly about next week's episode 3 as well, about the girls.
As well, Thursday, we will have our next G1 show with Bruce Lord and Kate from Montreal. Saturday, Wei and I will be on the cafe chatting the semifinals, and Sunday is the final with Bruce, Karen, and WH Park. So lots of great stuff coming up. We've got the NWA podcast on Sunday night. Lots to be found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Including the return of MCU later, talking about Eyes of Wakanda. That is available right now in the Post Wrestling Cafe feed. So check out Rich and WH's show at the moment, or on the free feed. We got the latest edition of Pollock and Thurston as well.
That is right. We went heavy into the whole UFC deal with Paramount today. Look at this graphic that Brandon Thurston made. I mean, he got a lot of compliments for this one.
Don't say this man doesn't have a sense of humor, okay? You can see it come out, especially in his graphics work, among many other facets of of Mr. Thurston there. So lovely, lovely graphic here.
And as always, I do want to get an update for you on the Marvel Disney front. Have your eyes been on Wakanda yet? Have you made contact with this new series?
No, and honestly, unlikely to at this point. I barely have time for the TV series, so I don't really have that much time or interest, quite frankly, on the animated. Why, do you?
No, I haven't seen it at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so quite the ringing endorsement here.
What are you making time for?
What am I making time for? Not a whole lot of late. I'm watching this O.J. Simpson documentary on Netflix at the moment.
Okay.
It's not the really great ESPN 30 for 30 that they did on it, which is maybe one of the greatest documentary series of all time, which made me hesitant to watch this new one. It's like, you're not going to beat one of the greatest doc series of all time, but it's, I don't know, it's something to watch.
Okay.
It's stuff I put on the background as I'm like working or something. So that's what I do.
That's not a great endorsement either.
I mean, it's nothing you have to, stop what you're doing and go watch.
How about this edition of Dynamite? Is this something you would put on in the background?
I missed it tonight, actually. I'm going to go off your notes. I wouldn't have been the only one. Cincinnati, Ohio. The Andrew J. Brady Music Center. That's a mouthful. 1,393 tickets out, according to WrestleTix. Man, they didn't really shut down the city. And they're coming back tomorrow night for another show in Cincinnati.
These are G1 numbers. Which is not a great
dude. The G1 did some higher numbers than this. This was just I don't know. And unlike some, like not to say this crowd was dead, but like it sounded like 1,000 people in this. Like it felt like we were in a big gymnasium, and it was God, it was one chant that they were. It was when Cope was out there, and I swear it had to have been like 8 people chanting "We want Christian" and. It sounded like 8 people chanting this, and it was just, I don't know, it wasn't that lively, I found.
Well, is there a particular thing you would point to for this? I mean, John Moxley being on the show, being from Cincinnati, you would think would make a bigger difference.
I can't give you like a clear answer, but I mean, whatever the booking has generally been well received, you know, their television numbers are holding up very well, no matter how you want to like spin them. And we don't know the max viewership, but it has not translated to ticket sales. You know, they've done better in Cincinnati in the past. Like they've run the big arena in Cincinnati in the past. And I don't know how big this venue is, but I mean, you can just look. They should get a bump next week because they're doing this show in Scotland. And you know, it's going into the pay-per-view. It's your first time running a show in Scotland. And I expect like a rabid crowd for next Wednesday. So that should be a bump for the atmosphere, at least. So MJF and Hangman Page are out for their face-to-face. They note Mark Briscoe not being cleared to travel after his beating last week. So MJF refers to the two of them as the main character and main antagonist of AEW. But Page is most vulnerable when he's angry, so MJF plans to make him angry. Page cuts him off, knocking the microphone out of his hands, stating, "You can't break me, just like you can't break out of your edgelord B-level movie incel routine, you shit." Said that, you shit at the end of it. And reminds MJF that in the end, Seabiscuit wins. Great point. How long has he been sitting on that comeback? It's been called Seabiscuit for months.
Maybe for months. Maybe.
Never seen it, so could have fooled me. He says, "You don't have a title shot yet," which I'm glad he did bring this up because I was watching this segment just assuming the match has been made at some point. He says, "You have not got the title shot yet because you haven't earned it, or you have to use your Casino Gauntlet contract to get it." So MJF demands a new microphone be handed to him, one that Hangman has not touched yet. And MJF says that Page is the real problem. "You're not as perfect as the fans believe. You're a fraud, a weak-minded, depressed, alcoholic little boy. And I'd rather be called the devil than a fake, phony idol like you, because I'm real. And you can take your... I'm going to take all these people's God," referring to Page, "and crucify you on pay-per-view."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get a hell of a stipulation here.
The return of God to pay-per-view.
Oh, God, yes, who has does have a cage match record. No, I thought you know, this would be a crucifixion match.
Oh, okay. I actually really like that motif a lot from MJF here, you know, like framing Paige as some sort of like, you know, deity in the eyes of the AEW audience. And of course, it works really well with, you know, MJF's whole devil shtick as well.
Yeah. I like religious overtones. I think they work well, generally. I'm sure.
Yeah, you went to a Catholic school.
Yeah, this is getting all my adolescence out in a wrestling form. Paige says, I understand my faults. I own up to them, and I don't run from them like you do. So, MJF, I know you're not going to take your shot because you're afraid. You need an insurance policy if you get a title shot. And he tells him, why don't you take your shot? You're one of the originals here. We're day one guys at AEW. Go all in. And be more than an insecure, gutless coward like the people perceive you. And we got the MJF snapping and making a rash decision that he has done in the past, where he executes his contract for Forbidden Door, and the crowd chants, you fucked up, as the match is set for August 24th.
I guess I always thought like executing the contract in this case would require like a signature on the contract. No. I didn't realize it was like a verbal commitment.
Yeah. Could you imagine if all those Money in the Bank cash-ins were executed by your music playing, and that's it? They're thwarted, they're gone.
Yeah. So, yep, simply saying that I'm executing my contract is enough to
actually... So in both cases, they are not doing the WWE run-in cash-in. They're announcing it in advance, and they're getting rid of these contracts at the first available pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. I don't dislike that at all. It might actually be something that would... Like, I almost feel like... If you're not going to do the surprise cash-in deal because maybe for fear of like comparisons to Money in the Bank, why not just stipulate it in the contract itself or like in the match type itself? You can get a title shot at any point you know, that you want, but it's not the surprise sort of cash-in. I think that would be perfectly fine and acceptable for an AEW audience. Overall, I thought it was a very good promo segment. You know, as they said, these two really do feel like they are the signature heel and baby faces of at least AEW's homegrown talent. And of course, the chemistry is excellent with both of them in those roles. I really liked having Paige pressure MJF to use the contract by suggesting that, well, what, you don't feel confident enough in beating me that you feel like you need an insurance policy? And this crowd certainly played their part by chanting something I will not repeat on this particular podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I do, however, feel, though, like this might be a bit of a nitpick, but I do kind of feel like a babyface who is very confident in himself would not mind beating, or at least the challenge of beating an MJF in both one match and also in a second match directly following. Like, that to me would be like a really badass, like Steve Austin, I don't give a shit what insurance policy you got, I'm going to kick your ass anyway type of move. And Paige to me almost seemed just a tiny little bit cowardly to have to kind of navigate this sort of like these sort of mind games in order to just avoid that. I mean, yes, in the end he's asking for a fair fight, which is totally fine. I just think, like, you know, Steve Austin would be like, I'll beat you and I'll beat you with your contractor afterwards. So what did you think?
I know what you're saying, but the other side of that is I also feel fans don't want to see a babyface that's also an idiot that is going to put himself into a position where, like, the setup to this is that he gets this title shot and he can survive this war with MJF. He's not degrading that MJF is this top level wrestler, but he survives this war and then he's put himself in a position where he could win the match and then the cash in is made. And you look like an idiot here because you basically got to beat this guy twice.
I don't think he would look like an idiot, though. I think he'd be saying, I will beat you twice at this pay-per-view.
Well, if he loses, then he kind of looks like an idiot that he walked into this situation.
Yeah, I guess it's one way to look at it. To me, I would look at it as, wow, like, this is a guy who's very confident in his abilities.
Well, We go outside, and John Moxley's just been hanging out with Shafir and Yuta, enters the arena, but first tells the camera, directing his message to Darby, that whatever you think is happening at Forbidden Door isn't happening. And that would be the understatement of the show, as we would go into this where people thought we were getting Darby and Moxley, and by the end of this show, we would, but not in that form.
No.
So Moxley takes on Kevin Knight. They had a nice match together. Knight is selling early on, and they had the big stage setup, go like the ramp toward the ring. So they use that here with Knight leaping off the stage and Moxley sidesteps. So Knight crashes into the barricade. Yuta gets involved with a cheap shot as Shafir is blocking Speedball, and Moxley starts to bite Knight's forearm, and Knight bites him back. So Knight then leaps to the top for a superplex, then gets caught with the cutter out of nowhere and hits a pescado over the turnbuckle to the floor. And as he's dealing with Yuta off the apron, manages a DDT, goes for the UFO splash, but lands on the knees, and Moxley locks on a Darce choke and puts out Kevin Knight for the win. And I like that we are altering some of John Moxley's submissions.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't quite a Darce choke from what I could tell. Like, Darce usually has like an arm inside. This looked more like a ninja choke, but it was incredibly cool either way. I thought it was a great opening match. And, you know, even though you know what the result is going to be, you are captivated by the performances either way. And in this case, I thought it was a great chance to see what a Kevin Knight would do against somebody on the level of a John Moxley. He looked excellent, you know. At the moment, he kind of is fulfilling the role of just, you know, being this sort of white meat, generic high flyer, which is fine for the moment. But in ring, he certainly does stand out. And I think it says a lot that, like, a Kevin Knight can maintain his babyface appeal in Cincinnati against John Moxley.
Yeah, I mean, the announcers were saying that, you know, Moxley's getting cheered here. And there were some cheers, but it was nothing like, you know.
The dueling chant was, let's go Moxley. Yuta sucks. So they weren't even booing Knight. Like, they love Moxley, but they also don't dislike Knight. So they were picking on Yuta, even though he wasn't involved in the match.
So we get a post-match attack where Yuta's going after Bayley and Knight. Shafir gets involved, and then Darby comes out with a body bag, and Knight goes after Moxley. Darby targets Yuta, putting him into the body bag again, and he's setting up for a coffin drop when Claudio, who had not been out with the Death Riders, appears out of nowhere, takes out Darby, hits the hands-free airplane spin, and puts Darby into the body bag. And this is where we get a chair wrapped around Darby's neck after they pull him out of the bag, and Will Ospreay returns, attacking Claudio, takes out Yuta, and says that after you tried to snap my necks, I'm going to do the same to you. And he tells the Death Riders, get your friends, I'll get mine, for a Lights Out steel cage match in London.
Mm-hmm. So does Lights Out suggest that'll end the show?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So this will be the main event. I mean,
they will call the title match the main event because they don't acknowledge these Lights Out matches as a match. But yeah, this will close the show.
It will close the show above MJF and Page.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Anything involving Will Ospreay, I think it is a very justifiable main event in London. And they're certainly adding star power to this one.
Maybe he'll win, and then he'll throw up a countdown clock for a year until Wembley. That'll be a... That's how they'll end the show. Countdown to August 2026.
Get your tickets now.
Yeah. Get your tickets now, yes. Mm-hmm.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We've got so much going on at the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 a month gets you access to the full Post Wrestling experience. The newest Rewind Away will be going back to 2001 as we will review King of the Ring, featuring Edge winning the crown and Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon in a very well-remembered street fight. Plus, it's all of our reviews of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and so much more. All of it can be yours at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Mercedes Moné, Tekla, Sky Blue taking on Alex Windsor, Willow Nightingale, and Queen Aminata. Timeless Toni Storm and Athena appeared on the balcony and watched the match. Aminata hit a spinning full Nelson slam and then the chocolate kisses to Mercedes. They take control of Alex Windsor in their corner until Willow is tagged in. She stacks the heels in the corner, hitting a cannonball. Windsor is repeatedly going for a sharpshooter onto Mercedes. And then Willow's in, hits a big pounce. Blue hits a tornado DDT. Aminata headbutts Tekla, so all 6 are down, and it leaves Windsor with a pop-up back to the sharpshooter on Sky Blue, who taps out. I thought these 6 did like a really good job in this trios match. Like, it was fast paced, and like sometimes we have seen these multi women matches in AEW, and it's like some of it's like hit and miss. But overall, like I thought they all performed pretty well here. They put like a good spotlight on Alex Windsor, setting her up for Forbidden Door. I just thought these 6 gelled very well together.
Agreed. I mean, the principal focuses here are Moné and Alex Windsor ahead of, you know, their respective, their match.
The four-way.
At Forbidden Door. The four-way, right, yeah. But, I mean, you have an incredible supporting cast that you could just kind of add on as, like, these sort of, like, to flesh out these matches, to give you, like, you know, compelling interactions between the focus talents without actually, of course, giving away the match. And I the supporting cast is so strong right now between Tekla Blue and Aminata and Willow. So I love that they're getting this consistent airtime, being, you know, able to be showcased here. I thought they did a good job, you know, pushing Windsor here. They gave her the win. They continue to establish the Scorpion Deathlock. They're also trying to get Windsor over as like a catchphrase.
They are trying. They are trying to do that.
They put it at the beginning of her music, like, you know, Toni Storm is saying it.
She says it in her promos. It's
commentators are saying it. I mean, I think I applaud the effort to attach some sort of, like, you know, showmanship to the presentation. I wonder how much it'll take off.
Way's being exceptionally kind.
I am really, yeah.
So Storm and Athena brawl on the balcony, like right at the edge here. We could have had a travesty or just destruction here. They eventually make their way to the ring, and they come up the stage. The baby faces fight back and clear out the ring. Toni is standing with her new best friend, her replacement Mina, and challenges them to a tag match for next week, that being Athena and Mercedes, and hopes that they are wearing something underneath their kilts next week in Glasgow. So Toni Storm and Alex Windsor against Mercedes and Athena, which it's a pretty big tag match for television.
I'd say so. Yeah. Yeah. When are we supposed to find out about the Stardom and CMLL?
I'm guessing next week at some point.
But don't we know when those qualifying matches are taking place?
They haven't announced any qualifying matches, and I'm wondering if we're
not in AEW, but like in CMLL and Stardom.
Yeah, so they haven't announced anything.
Oh, not really for their promotions even.
So I don't know if they're even doing matches.
Okay.
I mean, they could do a match, but they haven't announced anything. We may just get a graphic and they announced the participants.
Okay.
Renee speaks with Ospreay, and he had just spoken to Tony Khan, who was unaware of the challenge that he was going to make for the Lights Out steel cage match. And he made a phone call to someone, and he is assembling his team, which will consist of himself, Darby, and among others, Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Renee asks, "How's your neck doing? You have herniated discs." And Will says, "I'm fine." tell your husband I'd like to talk to him in Scotland next week, which out of context just sounds like a ridiculous idea when you guys are in the same building and we're going to fly across the world to talk next week.
You want it to be broadcast, right?
I guess so.
You yes. want it to be recorded for the world to see it.
I will save my words for somewhere bigger than 1300 at the Andrew J. Brady Music Center.
I like the, you know, obviously mentioning of the herniated disc here to show some sort of vulnerability, which is really gold for any sort of babyface heading into a match as dangerous as a cage match. So really every babyface at this point kind of has a body part that they can showcase in their matches, whether it be Kenny's midsection, you got Ospreay's neck, and you're about to get Swerve's knee. And Ibushi's just, I mean, everything. Tanahashi's knees. Ibushi's whatever.
A lot for Tanahashi. I think the knees are probably leading the way, but I'm sure there's plenty with him.
Mm-hmm. Between everybody on the team, and have one body, one working body.
Yeah. What's Darby's weakness?
His sense.
He is working with a limited amount. Cope and Stoke was our, well, I barely will call this a match. This was as much of an angle for an AEW promoted match as you're going to get. Stokely is dragged to the ring by security, and finally the match begins, and Stokely was very funny here. Twice he runs at Cope and bounces off of him like Cope was Andre the Giant here, and just bounces off of him. The crowd is just having fun. They're chanting "Fight Forever" or "Holy shit." And Cope starts interviewing fans that could not have been more planted if they had just had the word attached to their forehead. Spears him inside of the ring when FTR appear. Now, initially, wasn't this like 200 feet that this stipulation was, that the restraining order held them to? I didn't have my measuring tape out, but I don't think the entire length of this arena was 200 feet. So they're out there, but oh man, do we help them or not? And they eventually run to the ring, thus negating the restraining order. It is now null and void, which, again, this is how restraining orders work, folks. And he fights off FTR, but then as he goes for a spear to Stokely, Stokely throws powder in his face. FTR get involved, and the DQ is called. So FTR beat on him, and our five guys at ringside chanted, "We want Christian." Christian heard, and as they're going for the Spike pile driver, out comes Christian Cage to his music with Spike chasing them away. Then Nick Wayne appears with a chair. He gets stopped by Spike, and then Kip Sabian appears, and Cope makes the save, spearing Sabian. And then Cope and Cage go back to back. They turn around, and Copeland has still got all the powder thrown from Stokely, and he looked like Daniel Stern in like Home Alone 2 during the break-in. So they stare at one another, and I'm like, man, they're accelerating this a bit. And then they hug. I'm like, they're really accelerating this. And then by the end of the next quarter hour, they're in a tag match for Forbidden Door against Kip Sabian and Nick Wayne. So this went into hyperspeed, and we got the reunion. Christian found himself in the last 2 weeks. After his promo that did not lead you to any of this all of a sudden. And that was that. He nods to Copeland and walks off.
I mean, the promo did sort of, I was satisfied enough with the pace of this reunion. And I also understand the fact that like Tony likely wanted more as full of a card as possible by this point. In the build-up to Forbidden Door to sell more tickets, to just, you know, build anticipation for a Copeland-Christian reunion, that I think they needed to ramp things up and actually give you, at the very least, a hug prior to announcing the match itself. They did also, though, say that, okay, even if they had, like, Excalibur, I believe, was, like, saying, even if they still have differences, the match is official, so they better work things out. So I think you're still going to get teases of dissent between the two of them, slightly.
I do think Copeland needs to sit down with him and say, you know, about my dead mother that you made light of.
Well, Christian, I thought, like, justified that decently in saying that, Copeland, you've done a lot of shitty things in your time, too, as a heel. And therefore, this is just me playing the role of bad guy in a professional.
He did attack Cena's father at his home, so I guess it's a fair game.
He understands, right?
So I mean, the way I feel this should be mapped out is like FTR should win these tag belts from the Hurt Syndicate, and I think like they have always talked about the idea of like they have never had the tag titles headline a pay per view. Copeland and Cage going for the tag titles in Toronto, that should be the main event of that show if that's where you're going towards.
I think it could be a very justifiable main event.
I would say if you're ever going to headline a show with the tag titles, I think this is the closest you've got to do it.
Well, let me pause there. I would not have Hangman Page be the semi-main event two pay-per-views in a row if the Lights Out is in fact headlining this one.
It's not the real main event. It's it's Lights Out way.
I think that FTR versus Edge and Christian could be placed anywhere on the show, and it would still be one of the big reactions of the event.
Let me put it this way: in Toronto, it should be promoted as
it will be
strong as anything.
Edge in the Maple Leaf is the logo, is the poster of All Out. So yeah, it would be. Just a note here, CMLL Informa, which is, I believe, the promotion's talk show, did announce Persephone as the representative in the match in the four-way.
When did they announce that?
Like, just now.
Oh, just now. Okay. Like,
while we were on air. Yeah.
Would have been nice if they could have just announced that on Dynamite.
Well.
They had the exclusive. Collision. Okay, yeah. Well, there you have it, Persephone. And I imagine Stardom's going to do the same thing. They're going to wave their magic wand, and someone's going to be sent. We had a quick vignette. With this music, with the skyline and a hook signal in the air. So,
yeah.
He is coming back at some point.
He's coming back. I mean, will he be associated with the ops? I would think so, right? After like the last time we saw him teasing some sort of dissent between them. So,
I don't think they're going to drop that cold.
I don't think so either.
If he's moving on, they will resolve it somehow, which I'm fine with. I like this version of the ops. I think this is the stronger trio. Mm.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Young Bucks, Josh Alexander and Kyle Fletcher taking on Brody King, Hologram, Tomohiro Ishii, and the mystery man, Hiromu Takahashi, who will face Kyle Fletcher at Forbidden Door. So it was a red herring from Don Callis when he stated that whoever shows up, I'm going to take off this tie and choke you into oblivion, as he mentioned on Collision Saturday, which as soon as there was no way of Fit Finlay being on this show. So when they announced that this person was going to wrestle on Wednesday, it certainly limited the field of who this could be.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. This random pyro goes off and they announce that they don't have any music for the Young Bucks this week. And the graphic lists Mr. Instant Replay and Slick Nick, their original nicknames.
Oh, this is almost definitely too deep of a cut for me to recognize right away.
You got to,
what did they wrestle as in Mr. Instant Replay and Slick Nick?
I think this was like their backyard stuff that they did. Wow. When they were like kids and stuff, like very, very early, like 2001 ish. So, the Bucks take out Justin Roberts with super kicks and they get fined $10,000 in the middle of the match. And Tony Schiavone announces he has to replace Justin Roberts and will be ring announcing on TBS for the first time since 1989. So the match continues. They got the heat on. Hologram hits a dive onto the heels. Then they take out Brody King with super kicks on the apron. Fletcher goes for another brainbuster to Tomohiro Ishii on the edge of the apron. Thankfully, this time, Hiromu saved Ishii because he took this full force on Saturday, and it was just gnarly. Hologram hits a 450, landing on Fletcher's knees, and then they set Brody over the top rope into the tombstone position with Kyle when Nick hits the Indy Taker, taking out Brody temporarily. Heat is on Hologram until he manages to tag Hiromu, and Hiromu's in. He takes a tombstone from Kyle for a two count. Excalibur notes that Hiromu has a history of neck injuries. That's putting it mildly. Brody returns with a tope suicida, and then it's Hologram with a swanton to the Bucks on the floor, and Hiromu is left with Josh Alexander, stops the C4 spike, and wins with the time bomb. Perfect finish for what you needed to do here, and Hiromu getting the pin, and sets up him and Kyle Fletcher going into Forbidden Door.
Great match. I thought, you know, surprise, surprise, you know, the Bucks are involved in a great multi-man match on Dynamite. But at this point, we kind of expect one of these great multi-man matches on every edition of Dynamite, and it would feel very lacking if we didn't get one. This certainly provided that and gave you some added star appeal here and a surprise from Hiromu Takahashi. Everybody looked awesome. Again, this does, like, everybody, for the most part, is, outside of Hiromu, an AEW wrestler. But I still associate a lot of these names as, well, certainly in the case of Ishii, but even just, even in like a Josh Alexander, I still kind of see very much as a TNA talent. So these still very much feel like all-star games from all over professional wrestling, in this sort of like mishmash of like great talents. So everybody looked great. The Bucks, I think, continue to feel really reinvigorated as part of this post EVP run. Their matches have been consistent this entire time, but now that their characters are also of interest, it's making the whole package just very compelling. Good showcase for Hiromu. He's, to me, is like one of those guys who hasn't really been, I would almost say, underexposed, like with the whole crossover thing. And so I almost kind of feel like his peak in popularity as a crossover act might have been a few years ago. But there's still, I think, a lot that you should be doing with him right now.
Yeah, I think this is a chance for him to have a really outstanding match with a guy that I feel is ascending to becoming like one of the top wrestlers in the entire world at the moment, in Kyle Fletcher. So I'm looking forward to that.
And the crowd will go nuts for Hiromu in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. The London setting is only going to amplify this. So we come back from break, and there's this wide shot of Renee and no audio coming out. So Excalibur and Taz have to kill time, and then they go back to Renee, who brings out Swerve. And Renee, I don't know if she was violating any HIPAA laws here, reveals that she saw Swerve. She was like eavesdropping and saw Swerve with the doctors and asked, "Are you cleared?" And Swerve says, "You know, we're tough people. Nothing's going to get in my way of facing Okada." It's like, if you're not cleared, then that would literally be getting in the way of you facing Okada. Like, that is how these things work. So Okada comes out. This is a man that generally has been known of as, you know, a connoisseur of style. This suit he was wearing was one of the most hideous looking things I have ever seen. It looks like he murdered a reptile of some sorts. And
he's
then
worn this before. This is one of his robes.
Is it? Well, this was not a
robe. Isn't this a robe? Was this a robe or a suit?
If you zoom out, I'm pretty sure this was a suit.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, oh. I don't know about this.
Who are we to say what's popular? We're not exactly fashion plates ourselves.
We're not? No. Okay. Well, Okada comes out.
Sort of let you know.
He tells Swerve, "With that knee, you have no chance, and you may as well give up now, you bitch." And that's enough. Swerve shoves Okada. Security's out to separate them. Generally, I've been very high on this build. This was less of one. But the key of this was introducing an injury for Swerve that will obviously be a big focus of the match. So that was sort of the purpose.
No Don Callis on the show, interestingly.
Yeah, that's right. It seemed like a very obvious pre-tape on Collision as well for the brief segment he had teeing up Hiromu's arrival this week. We didn't get Callis at all. The Death Riders are interviewed by Alicia Toot, and I don't know why, but I found this so entertaining. Alicia was informing Moxley about Hiroshi Tanahashi, and his response, she says, "Tanahashi is going to be on their team," and his response is, "Hiroshi Tanahashi?" I was so hoping. I don't know any other Tanahashis in pro wrestling. So, or at Tanahashi's period. I probably should, but I just thought Moxley's reaction was great. Like, oh shit, not Hiroshi. So he walks into the extras room, and they do have extras there. For what purpose, I have no idea. They were all warming up for nothing. And they are there with the Bucks, and they have a conversation with the Young Bucks.
Great reveal of the Bucks being in the extras room. I mean, just think it's all their extras there, but then they slowly pan over to reveal that it was the Bucks very good. There.
Yeah, so you could only see the extras. You don't see the Bucks when the door opens. So yeah, it was a nice reveal here. Because you had no idea what he was even doing in this room. Like, he was just going to grab three random people to be on his team. Uh-huh. But we come back from break, and Tony Schiavone is in the ring and with the most enthusiasm announces two matches for Forbidden Door. We get Copeland and Christian against Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. And the Lights Out Steel Cage match will feature John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, the Young Bucks, And back to somewhat full strength, Gabe Kidd at the end of G1 season. He is back.
What somewhat full strength. At least he's cleared. We know that.
How many bad knees and necks do we have in this match? Like, everyone is walking wounded into this one. The opponents will be Darby Allin, Will Ospreay, Hiroshi, Tanahashi, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi. This was like the most insane announcement of like this cavalcade of people we have at our disposal, and all the like the bar for this cage match is just ridiculously high, and I am certain that there are people that are not even near 100% for this match.
Oh, my God.
They're going to go out there and kill it. I have no doubt.
Look at this babyface team, okay? You have Hiroshi Tanahashi coming off of the G1, okay? Like, who is, like, barely able to, like...
He's holding himself together.
He's able to do high-five flows. He's able to do dragon screws, and that's, I think, as much as you need from him in a match like this. Omega, who, you know, I think his status is always, I'm sure, somewhat to be question just given what he went through. Kota Ibushi, who last time we saw looked great, so far
so good. Like, of the last outings we've seen from him, is that,
yeah,
you know, there's enough in this cage match with the 10 of them that, like, I don't doubt there will be some insane things that they incorporate into this match, just given what we've seen Ospreay do this year alone in cage matches. But I think, like, it's a match that you can work around physical limitations of some. Like, there's no way you can tell me Gabe Kidd is going to be 100% for this.
Yeah, nor I would assume Will Ospreay, although, like, the details of his particular injury are maybe a little bit more ambiguous. But, you know, being in a multi-match setting at least takes the pressure off of any single or any two of these men from having to completely deliver. But nonetheless, like, this being a lights-out match means that there are going to be a lot of weapon spots. Now, these are also things that might actually be like bells and whistles that will just be able to help their performances, even if they aren't 100% physically. If anybody's doing a dive, I feel like maybe we can expect the Darby Allin
100%. This is his first match since December. He's had no matches back yet.
Wow. Yeah. So, Gabe Kidd, you know, also a big question mark about, you know, how healthy he is, but something tells me that he'll be well rested enough to just do something crazy for this particular match. Yeah, this is a very justifiable main event. It also makes me wonder, though, like, do you think this was always the plan, or do you think at some point they were actually considering Darby versus Moxley as a singles?
I would almost think for sure. Like, there was no hint of any of this. And I'm sure that this, I can't say this definitively, but, like, to me, this could not have been the idea of what you were going to do Will Ospreay's match with, and mm-hmm. Kenny's match, and just like all of this was built towards Moxley and Darby. But this also logically makes sense. And there's no way, like, a month out, they could have expected to have Gabe Kidd in this, you know, whatever. To answer your question, this does feel like a pivot, but it's a hell of a pivot.
Does it tell you anything about a potential for like blood and guts involving these, or at least the Death Riders? Because this does feel very, well, it would almost feel too similar, right?
I don't see this. Like, honestly, it's the women's feud that seems to be they're building up for. If they're going to do a blood and guts, it feels like it's going to be on the women's side this year. That's what that feels like. And honestly, you could do Moxley and Darby a month later. Like, doesn't need to be on this show. Like that's certainly a viable match for Toronto. I mean, God, you're gonna get the Bucks and the Golden Lovers in this match. Like, just the combinations of this whole thing. You have the outstanding deal with Kidd taking out Ospreay at All In last month. You know, Tanahashi and Kidd have, like, their history, just doing the singles match recently. Like, so many of these combos are, like, I think the bar is going to be very high for this match, and I don't doubt that this is going to be a hell of a non-main event main event.
So I kind of feel bad for Wheeler Yuta. Like, just no room for him. Pac is still injured.
Pac is still injured. Mm, yes.
Okay. No potential of even an appearance from him. You think?
Not to say he couldn't appear. Like, if there is a show for him to appear on, this would be it. Yeah. I don't know what the timetable is for him. We've got so much going on at the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 a month gets you access to the full Post Wrestling experience. The newest Rewind Away will be going back to 2001 as we will review King of the Ring, featuring Edge winning the crown and Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon in a very well-remembered street fight. Plus, it's all of our reviews of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and so much more. All of it can be yours at postwrestlingcafe.com. And then the main event, it was the returning Samoa Joe with Powerhouse Hobbs and Katsuyori Shibata against LFI. LFI just had this amazing match with Hangman and Jet Speed on Saturday. And me and Kate were talking about this, like getting LFI into a position to go for these belts. And when this was announced today and it's a non-title match, like I thought for sure this is setting up LFI as challengers. But instead, this is a really like kind of basically laid out match where Shibata sold for like 75% of the match, made the tag to Hobbs, who came in, did all of his big power spots, splash into the corner. And then Joe got the tag, Coquina clutch, put out Dralistico, clean win for the champions. And I was very surprised by this outcome. And just they didn't build up LFI at all as potential challengers.
In fact, I felt it quite brief, you know, for something that is supposed to be in the main event spot here, and at least not didn't build to that much drama in my
this opinion. Has to be the least amount of notes I've ever written for an AEW main event.
Yeah, I'm, you know, this coming at the very end, I guess it like you do always have to wonder if something was cut due to time, but I this didn't even seem to lead to anything.
There was no angle. Like I was sure that like this ends at like 10:05 and they're holding the belts up forever and you're just assuming an angle is coming, and there was nothing. We got an angle, but it wasn't involving any of these six.
Yeah, again, we know Hook is coming, so he's likely to be paired up with the opposite, or at least like in feuding with or involved with the opposite somehow, but nothing to suggest an LFI ops interaction in the future.
Yeah, it's just like I had whiplash going from Collision on Saturday, where I thought LFI were just like they were stars of the show, and coming out of it, you had all these ideas for them. And tonight it just felt like all of that was just vanquished. That's what it felt like. So we go to the back. Hangman is leaving and Renee catches a word with him, and he's jumped by MJF in the parking lot and smashes his head into the hood of a car and tells him that you haven't seen anything yet. And he's left laying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, as a beatdown, I think we've seen much more memorable, but this does at least take things to a bit more of an aggressive and violent tone. So MJF promising, what's he going to do, burn the man's house down?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's got to be worse than that.
What could be worse? Maybe we're going to see him try to break into his kid's room, and there's going to be an alarm now that goes off. He gets arrested.
I don't know. I can only imagine what he'll be thinking about. Maybe he'll take his phone out of the phone case and then he will drop it.
Pro Wrestling Booking 101. Well, there you go. Forbidden Door is now up to 9 matches we've got. So got a pretty pretty extensive card at this point.
Do we have room for much more?
Of course. There will be much more.
Compared to the prior year.
How many matches were last year, including 0 Hour?
Including 0 Hour, 15.
15. Oh, my God. Now, so we've only got half the card.
5 of those were 0 Hour matches. So proper show was I guess, 10 matches. So
okay, well, we're almost there. I mean, you do have to fit a bunch of, CMLL is running a show that day. There's only a select amount of performers that are available that day. But I do imagine next week we're going to get a bunch of New Japan and CMLL talent, probably reserved for the 0 Hour other than the 4-way. And
So wait, you say CMLL are running a show. So who won't be available? Who should we not expect to be?
I mean, Mystico is not available. I don't know the full list off the top of my head, but okay. There are like certain names that won't be available.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, like there's no room at this point for anybody at this point. Like they're... The only
let's go through the card so far.
Yeah. So we have the Lights Out Steel Cage match. We just went over the 10 performers. That should go on last, given the stipulation. Hurt Syndicate against the winner of the title eliminator tournament that they did announce for next week in Scotland, with FTR against Brodito. Kazuchika Okada against Swerve for the unified title. Timeless Toni Storm against Athena for the women's title. Mercedes, Alex Windsor, Persephone, and the Stardom representative for the TBS title. Kyle Fletcher against Hiromu. Zach against the winner of the technical spectacle that is going to be taped tomorrow night to air on Saturday. Hangman against MJF for the singles title. And then Copeland and Christian against the matriarchy, as it is listed here on Wikipedia, Kip Sabian and Nick Wayne. This looks like a hell of a card. For all the talk about Forbidden Door kind of felt like this lull coming off of All in Texas, I think this has shaped up to become quite the card.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing the card laid out like this, I do think if there was any consideration for Paige versus Mark Briscoe, I think an MJF match is much more attractive for a pay-per-view, and I think we're seeing the results of it already on the television. It certainly adds a lot to this event. Having a Copeland and Cage reunion for the first time in several years feels like a major attraction, good for pay-per-view. The likely promise of a Nigel McGuinness, Zack Sabre Jr. is an amazing match for obviously the local audience, but also for the hardcores. Hiromu Fletcher looks like an awesome match.
Oh, that match, like, you're looking at this card, and it's like, what would you be looking at as like a liability on this show? Like the Hurt Syndicate match? And it's like,
dude, even Okada Swerve looks awesome, right?
Oh, Okada Swerve, I think, will be very strong with this crowd. Like Hurt Syndicate are either going to be with FTR or Brodito. And quite frankly, this should be FTR winning the belts if that's the direction you're going. Which
agreed.
Hurt Syndicate losing, at least like they have built it up that should be a big deal of them finally losing these belts. So
yeah, no, I don't think there's any sort of liability on the show. I think every match looks like it could be very strong, or at least of significant interest.
All right, well, there you go, everybody. That is Dynamite, and that is the card. Is because next week is the go home shows for Forbidden
Door.
Now
the question is, what will WWE put on the other? Oh, sorry,
they got Heatwave. Way
they got Heatwave. Never.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Okay, they got Heatwave that night.
They got Heatwave. Okay,
so yeah. We're right, gonna find out. Who is Obafemi going to defend the title against? These are the burning questions. And Jordan Grace against Blake Monroe. Mm-hmm. She's fighting for the little Jordans.
All right.
Okay, we're going to head on over to the forum. Thanks to everybody for joining us here. Hit subscribe on the channel. It does help us. Everyone complains about the algorithm, all this shit that they send your way. Subscribe to the channel, and then you'll just get post-wrestling filtered to you every day. Isn't that the way to live?
Of course it is.
You know what I do to my algorithms when I do these like Hulk Hogan pieces and stuff? You know how much stuff I've got to like live with for the next like 2 months of my algorithm?
Oh, you're getting TMZ every other video suggested, I'm sure.
Oh, I get the worst of the worst sometimes of like, well, you go down these research holes and then I'm stuck with all this stuff forever. So on that note, goodbye on YouTube and for everyone on the Post Wrestling Cafe. The party is just starting.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.